The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Sports Talk 1240 is brought to you by DraftPot.com. DraftPot is changing fantasy sports. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with promo code SportsTalk1240 and receive a 100% deposit bonus. And now, Sports Talk 1240.
The world is yours.
Good evening, welcome to Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday evening. What is today? It's today, January 10th, and it's pretty much a Happy New Year for everybody, those we didn't say before. We got a lot to talk about today, you know. Basically, NFL wild card weekend was just really a wild weekend. If you think about it, you got lopsided victories, you got close games to the wire, you got a lot of questions to ask about these teams advancing. We have a lot to talk about. We have Thomas Emmerich coming up soon talking about wild card weekend. We also have Jazz Waring. He has a new job working on the NBA. Besides, he's been working with Bleacher Report as a writer. Now he's making transitions to be a multimedia writer. We'll see him during the show. Of course, listen to him. First off, I want to shout out to Mike Piazza and Ken Griffey Jr. for making the Hall of Fame. I mean, you know, it's been a long time coming. You know, I thought Piazza should have made it a few years ago. Griffey made it almost 100%, but you know, it's never going to be 100% when it's 99.6%. Those three voters, it's just, you know, they think like they could vote anybody else, and it's not going to happen, but we'll see what happens. But I want to shout out to that. So let's talk about NFL weekend. You know, there's a lot of stuff happening this weekend. I mean, where can you start? You got Kansas City just really just steamrolling past the Texans. You had basically Pittsburgh and Bengals just fighting each other off throughout the whole game until the last wire. Today, you had Seattle and the Vikings in one of the coldest weathers in the game, and, you know, the bigger, better team won. And then you got the Packers and Redskins, and they just, you know, they pretty much went down, and Rodgers was doing what he was. But I wanted to start, basically, before we get Thomas on, about this weekend, because wild card weekend is a very interesting weekend. It's probably the best weekend out of the whole NFL postseason. And you look at these teams, and each team, basically, you know, going against the third seed, sixth seed, four and five, they all have different, I guess you could say, different tactics on how they're going to win the game, how they're going to lose. And then you look at the first game and start off with a bang. You had a kickoff return from Kansas City side, and it was just 7-0 out of nowhere. Texans had the ball back, and then, you know, pretty much from there, they weren't the same. I mean, that team, pretty much they have no quarterback, and the fact that they were in pretty much into the playoffs at 9-7, making it and facing a Kansas City team who, by the way, is probably the hottest team in the league right now. I mean, they won pretty much 11 straight games, and now they're going to go with Foxborough next weekend. We'll see what happens from there, but I mean, it's just a lot of stuff you can talk about, especially in that game, because, I mean, let's be honest, we didn't think that Texans were going to be pretty much a competitive game against the Kansas City Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, you look at these teams, and you say yourself, which is the better team? Of course, you're going to say Kansas City Chiefs, because they pretty much have a quarterback, they actually had a defense, they actually have a coach that knows how to play offense, and suddenly, you know, they pretty much said, we're taking one game at a time, they play all three phases of the game better than the Texans. Even though Texans have a great defense, they have J.J. Watt. But you look at from, you know, talent perspective, well, I mean, what does Alex Smith has? He has Kelsey. He used to have Charles, but, you know, they made adjustments to it. And basically, he had a running game full of two running backs that fill in for what Charles has done, and they still have success on it. And we have Thomas Emmerich on the show. Thomas, you know, I got to ask you one thing before we get into these matchups of what happened this weekend. But it's just pretty much a bizarre weekend if you think about what happened between lopsided victories and heartbreaking losses.
Yeah, I mean, my heart goes out to, like, any Vikings fans and Bengals fans out there. It's just been decades of getting pulled in and believing and having every reason to believe in key playoff moments, and then thinking a guy can come through with a 27-yard field goal, or hoping the running back can hold on and pull out a victory where you're looking at 95% you know, probability of winning.
Yeah.
And somehow, each time the situation's come over the past four decades, somehow the 5% chance they lose just keeps happening.
Yeah, so we have Thomas Emmerich. He's from Sports Daily. He knows those fantasy sports. You can follow him at Thomas Emmerich on Twitter. So let's start with the lopsided victory in the first game of Saturday. You had Kansas City just steamrolling to the Texans with return touchdown. Hoyer just throwing four interceptions. I mean, how hot is this team right now?
Yeah, so the Chiefs, I feel like, I mean, obviously they're beneficiaries of a complete meltdown of the quarterback position for the Houston Texans. Brian Hoyer kind of signaled how bad it was going to be when he was missing those easy slants for, you know, first downs. That's when you know you're getting a bad Hoyer day. And on those days, the Texans aren't a team that should be anywhere near the playoffs. So that's the team the Chiefs got. And I mean, winning on the road is good and all, but that has to be factored in. On the bright side, the Chiefs won 10 straight games to end the season and didn't have Justin Houston for much of that, and now he's back. So you can argue the Chiefs are now better than they were defensively, better than they were during the regular season. On the other hand, you have Jeremy Maclin, at the very least, with a banged-up knee. We'll see if he can go this weekend. But that's going to make the Chiefs' offense a little less, I guess you could call them hot. But, you know, bit better than normal. They've been more efficient than normal, but we'll see how they rebound and respond to having Jeremy Maclin banged up.
So, you know, looking at this game, too, I mean, they pretty much had no quarterback for the Texans. I mean, Hoyer was just awful. I mean, he just threw four interceptions, and most of these interceptions were just like he was trying to make a play on it, and Kansas City was just reading it. I mean, do you feel bad for Texans fans knowing that they have no quarterback, and yet they're 9-17 that made it to the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously a successful season. If you're the Texans, and it's cycled through, I think, four quarterbacks. None of them are like starter quality NFL players. Brian Hoyer's a guy who gets, has a nice game in here and there. Has had like a couple good like three game stretches during his career, but he's one of those quarterbacks that can also just go completely nuclear, and that's what happened in the playoff game. So you know the fact that they could string together a 9-7 season out of that, even in a terrible division, you have to. If you're a Texans fan, you have to say, hey, this year turned out much better than it easily could have.
So let's go to the second game on Saturday then. You know, you talk about a rivalry between these teams, the Bengals and Steelers, and we thought the Steelers and Ravens had more, but it seems like the Bengals took it more personally against the Steelers. I mean, how much of that game was just wrong in terms of all these hits and the referees pretty much on every snapper down had to make sure these players were calmed down, they got a flag for, you know, unsportsmanlike conduct and stuff like that? I mean, how much was that into this game?
I mean, obviously, yeah, a huge part of it. And these are teams with a history that goes back quite a while. You have some bad blood from the game in 2006 when Carson Palmer's knee got taken out. That Bengals team that had a legitimate shot at winning the Super Bowl. And then instead the Steelers go on and win it. Even though you have like none of the same players from that day, with some teams and some divisions, you have bad blood kind of flow through the years, even as the rosters turn over. And I mean, it was apparent there. There's a number of situations where you could make an argument one way or another, whether it was an intentional helmet hitting another helmet or whether it was just an incidental byproduct of a violent game. There are a number of situations like that, but these guys were definitely out to impose their will physically on each other. And, I mean, it got heated and in some situations very much reckless.
You know, I put a tweet out during the game saying that, you know, if the Bengals lose this game, it's because they didn't respect the game. And I meant it in a way that after they got the interception from Landry Jones, they just ran into the locker room like the game was over. And it was almost like they were being, you know, being cocky. And then what happened was the next play, they fumbled the ball. And then at that point on, I felt like the Steelers just won the game. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I saw them running off into the locker room and, you know, kind of start counting the amount of timeouts the Steelers had left and how much time was left.
Yeah.
And even without thinking about the fumbles, like, you know, this game's not over. Especially if Roethlisberger has any chance of coming back in, you could see him on the sideline there. As long as, you know, Steelers could potentially put Roethlisberger back in the game with enough time to drive the field, it's, you know, it's a little crazy to consider the game quite over yet.
I know. I thought about it too. So what do you think of the head coach situation with Bengals? Do you think Marvin Lewis should be fired? Because personally, I felt like he has so many of these chances. And I know he didn't have Andy Dalton in this game, but when you're up by one and you have that much time to run the ball and basically just kick a field goal, making Roethlisberger go down the field, I mean, you got to win that game.
Yeah, it's hard to say what he could have done differently than this specific game, though. Gio Bernard, getting knocked out. He's typically the guy that they give the ball when they're trying to kind of run up the clock this year and just trying to have a safe pair of hands on the ball. He was out. They put in Hill, who's, you know, had some fumbling issues here and there. It seems like running the ball there is a smart move, and they, you know, with Bernard out, they gave it to the person they could, and it didn't work out. But, yeah, I mean, 7-0, you know, it's a staggering, you know, new NFL record for a head coach to lose a number of games to start his, like, NFL postseason career as a, you know, a head coach. That is something that's hard to ignore. You can kind of go through each game and kind of make your excuse here and there. You know, Dalton had a few meltdowns. You had the Carson Palmer knee game.
Yeah.
And then you have a couple games later in Carson Palmer's Bengals career, where those Bengals teams just weren't really that good. But, you know, seven's a lot. I personally would only personally fire or move Marvin Lewis if it meant that's my way of promoting Hugh Jackson head coach. But outside of that, I'm wary unless there's, you know, some other coach in the market I've been waiting for as an owner for a while to be available in the coaching market.
Well, certainly we'll see what happens from there. You know, a lot of the players, of course, were pretty much upset about the loss. Even AJ McCarron, who just said that he don't know why they lost the game, but we'll see what happens from there. You know, looking from today's game, you know, pretty much it was one close game and one pretty much a lopsided game. But Seattle won the game against the Vikings on basically a missed field goal. And, you know, like we said before, you know, it was heartbreaking for the Vikings fans to miss a chip shot that close. But looking at the Seattle team, and they struggled in the cold, is this team still good enough to go back to the Super Bowl?
Yeah, it's an interesting evaluation when you have a team out there in -3 to 5 degree cold.
Yeah.
It's, you know, everyone's kind of moving slow. Russell Wilson's moving slow in his, you know, plant and go when he's trying to evade Vikings defenders. And then you have a heavier ball, and it's gonna be a game that's pushed toward a low scoring close game by the elements. And Seattle played a fantastic game defensively, The Vikings were gifted the game script they wanted by special teams gaffe at the beginning and by Pete Carroll's reluctance to trust his kicker in the first half, coming away with no points and a couple trips in the red zone in the first half. So it feels like through bad circumstance, bad decision, and a little bit of bad luck, the Vikings got the game script that has helped them win enough to win the NFC North. And that played out today, and the elements kind of helped that all create a close game. So it's kind of hard for me to kind of downgrade Seattle going into next week. It's interesting now that Marshawn Lynch seems to be out of the equation. It was oddly absent this weekend. But I thought, you know, Kristen Michael, given the elements, you know, I think he should give the Seahawks enough to keep the offense rolling the way it's been recently.
How dangerous is Seattle going to Carolina? You know, knowing the history between these two teams, you know, last year basically when, you know, they went to Carolina, I mean, when Carolina went to Seattle, they got blown out. Now this year is a little turnaround. Now it's Carolina at home and Seattle on the road. So how dangerous can Seattle be going to Carolina?
Yeah, they'll definitely need Russell Wilson to hit the deep shots that he was missing today. He's been deadly accurate downfield over the past month and a half. Today, he wasn't at all. He had Doug Baldwin in the corner. He had Tyler Lockett in a deep route where an accurate deep ball with a little less air on it and a little more strength, a few more yards downfield, and you have two deep touchdowns, and he missed both of them. It was -3 degrees since, so I imagine that affected that. But he'll need to hit those against the Panthers because the Panthers have allowed some of those opportunities over the past few weeks. The defense has let extended plays leave guys like Julio Jones in favorable coverage downfield and other players. And the Giants were, even the Giants were able to exploit that, who were struggled on the stretch. So, I think there will be opportunities there for Wilson to hit the downfield pass as he had been hitting up until today.
All right. Well, so tell me about then today's game. Pretty much a lopsided game, Packers and Redskins. Was there really any chance for the Redskins to beat the Packers, or the Packers just got hot at the right time? Now that even though the Redskins pretty much weren't a good defensive team, so do you see that the Packers are finally got their offense back, or is it just the Redskins' defense not good?
Washington's defense is they present by far the easiest matchup the Packers have had in a while. You could argue the Raiders secondary is maybe better or worse, but that game was in a heavy downpour. The Packers also got shut down by a very good secondary with the Cardinals, and they had a tough time in Green Bay against Minnesota in the final week of the season. Washington secondary on a day where you don't have rain, you have some wind, but no rain or snow, it presents a much easier opportunity for Aaron Rodgers to get going and his receivers to get open. It's a below average secondary, and I think that's the threshold that this mediocre receiving corps is able to pass. That they haven't seen recently. They saw some good secondaries that couldn't get open. They saw bad secondary today. They were able to get open. And Aaron Rodgers is a good enough quarterback where if the receivers are finally getting open, he's, after struggling a bit early, he finally started, he was able to hit them. And that helped kind of spring the run game a little bit. And once Lacy got rolling a little bit, and even Cobb out of the backfield, they're struggling to bring him down on first contact. James Starks, once that running game got rolling too, that game was just pretty much over.
How much worry should the number one and number two seeds be against these wild card teams?
Yeah, so an interesting weekend with four road teams winning. So you have all lower seeds going into the second round. Carolina, obviously will not take Seattle lightly, being a team that knocked them out of the playoffs last year. I think Arizona, Green Bay is an interesting matchup, given how if Cardinals just whipped them a couple weeks ago. But you think, especially if Davante Adams ended up hurting his knee today, but if he's able to come back and play more like the guy he was today and the guy he was in last postseason than he was during the regular season, then Packers, you'd figure would have a shot there. The Packers defense also had played, I think, the best football of the season today. And it's just a team stacked with corners that could give, they could probably keep it close with the Cardinals there. Over on the AFC side, you got I don't think KC has seen New England since the infamous Monday night game where they kind of terrorized Tom Brady, and that was kind of the tipping point, is Brady done questions last year. Before Brady kind of pulled it back together. So, Casey hasn't seen New England since then. We'll see if that bad Monday night game was a result of Casey being a bad matchup for New England. That makes that very interesting. And then, of course, you got Denver against the Steelers. And if Roethlisberger can go, if Antonio Brown can go, if both of them can go, then that's a game. If both look like their normal selves, I think Steelers might be the better team there. So it'll be very interesting to see.
So which four teams do you have advancing to the championship round?
Well, I went into mid-season really liking how the Steelers were playing, even without Le'Veon Bell and with D'Angelo Williams. I think Fitzgerald, Toussaint, and Jordan Todden played well enough and gave you a little bit of what you want from a replacement for D'Angelo Williams. But, gosh, if they can somehow get D'Angelo back at some point, even as early as next week, and then get something out of him, I kind of like the Steelers, especially with Ryan Shazier kind of stepping up. If he's going to play at that level, they might have a shot there coming out of the AFC. And then obviously, if Ben Roethlisberger, shoulder is going to affect him too much this weekend, then I'm kind of off that wagon. So I was kind of liking them as my pick. All these injuries are kind of throwing a wrench in that. So with all that developing, it's hard not to kind of fall back on the Patriots as Edelman and Amendola get healthy, and the way Bill Belichick can game plan defensively for those one and done games. From the NFC, it's hard for me to go away from the Seahawks. It would be crazy to have 2 6 seeds in the Super Bowl, which obviously has never happened. And with all the injuries, Steelers probably won't pull that off. But, we might get a 1-6 here with Patriots and a Seahawks in the Super Bowl and a rematch. I think today's game is kind of one you analyze. You analyze it as a -3 degree game. Factor everything the Seahawks have done the past 6 weeks and how good and how we turn the form the defense has looked in the past 6 weeks before today when evaluating Seahawks as they go into Carolina. Right now I'd lean toward the Seahawks taking that game given both teams' performances over the past month. So, right now I got Seahawks over Patriots in the Super Bowl, and, if Steelers can get healthier for this weekend, then it seems like they will be. I think Steelers could also throw a wrench in there.
We have Thomas Emmerich here on Sports Talk 1240 AM WGBV. I have to ask you one more question before I let you go. Looking at the divisional round next week, which team has more pressure? I mean, we say same thing. Carolina, is up there. You have also the Patriots, Broncos. You have Peyton Manning. It might be his last year with the Denver. I mean, which one of these teams, one or two seed, have more pressure going into next week?
I would say the Broncos, mainly because they're the team that has so much to consider with their quarterback situation. There's so much pressure on that decision, whether you go Manning, who narrowly missed being the interception leader this season, despite not playing anywhere close to a full season. And then you have Brock Osweiler, who's had some good moments and had some other games where he looked like he just couldn't get past the first read and couldn't make anything happen if the defense took away that first option and didn't look like an NFL starting quarterback. So you have two options there. You have had some good moments with Osweiler. You've had a lot of bad with Peyton Manning early in the season. And you have probably the most talented defense in the NFL. So there's a lot riding there. There's a lot riding on Elway's decision to kind of go all in to win with Manning before the last couple off seasons, and then now watch. And then now watch the quarterback position fall apart the way it has. So I would say Denver definitely has the most pressure of any team. Great defense, but they have a tough decision to make at quarterback.
All right, Thomas, thank you for being on the show. As always, hope you enjoyed the divisional weekend.
Yeah, you too.
You too. All right. Have a good night. All right, so, pretty much the Broncos, that's a surprising pick. I thought it would be the Carolina Panthers, considering that they were 15-1. You have Cam Newton playing at the highest level in the MVP conversation, probably going to be the MVP this year. But that's interesting to see the Broncos, because you look at the Broncos, and you look at a team where they had to answer the quarterback position throughout the whole year. Peyton Manning was injured against the Chiefs. He was out of the game, put Brock Osweiler in the game. Brock played well, in the stretch. They pretty much hold down the fort. Too much Peyton Manning got healthy. Once he's healthy now, Gary Kubiak put him back, and now it looks like it's going to be Peyton Manning quarterbacking against the Steelers. Now, that's going to be interesting. You know, I had a poll here on Twitter. I don't know if everybody's seen it, but it's which team is the most dangerous heading to the next round? Now, out of 217 votes, you had 28% say Seattle, 15% for Green Bay Packers, 21% Pittsburgh Steelers, and look at this number. You got 36% for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, that's interesting to see because they got, like I said, Kansas City Chiefs who are on a streak right now. And, you know, some of these games that they've been winning, just been winning, but you look at it and you say to yourself, they're due for a loss, but are they due for a loss in Foxborough or they're due for a loss in the AFC Championship if they somehow beat the Patriots? Check out this scenario, though, for Super Bowl matchups. You could have the Kansas City Chiefs against the Green Bay Packers. I mean, look at that. You have Aaron Rodgers and Alex Smith in that same draft class facing off against each other in the Super Bowl, saying who's better than who. Or you can see pretty much Steelers and Seahawks, like he said, that could possibly happen. Or a rematch with the Patriots and the Seahawks that happened last year to make up for that game with the pass for probably the worst play in Super Bowl history. I mean, there's so many scenarios, but the way I see it, you got four of these wild card teams, all in which are dangerous in any way. You got Seattle with the experience that they had, now playing good on both sides, both offensively and defensively, even though it was a cold struggle today for Russell Wilson and that offense. You have the Green Bay Packers. Aaron Rodgers looks like he found his flow, either against a weaker defense, but we'll see what he does against the Cardinals defense. But they seem like they know what they're doing right now. Pittsburgh Steelers, I mean, it's pretty much about health for them, offensively. Ben Roethlisberger banged up. You had Antonio Brown took a shot in that Bengals game that pretty much gave him the field goal. I mean, there's a lot of questions to answer there, but they're still a dangerous team that could go into Denver and pretty much put up as many points as they can. And then you got the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, this Chiefs team going on a streak right now. I mean, what else can you say? If they somehow beat the Patriots, now that's going to be an interesting storyline because what if the Broncos beat the Steelers? You have the Chiefs and Broncos going at each other in the AFC Championship where Peyton Manning had probably his worst game of his career against the Chiefs, and you want that rematch. And that's interesting. Then you look at the NFC side. You had pretty much Seattle going Carolina and Green Bay going to Cardinals. What is this to say that the teams that, you know, pretty much are the wild card teams, the Packers, Seahawks, somehow beat Carolina and Arizona, and you got that going to pretty much the match for the NFC Championship of a rematch, but this time the Packers have the home field advantage of the Seattle. I mean, you could say anything. They could go either way. Maybe all these wild card teams advance. They go into the AFC and NFC Championship. You can see that happening, but we'll see what happens because there's a lot of questions to ask. And quite frankly, as any football fan right here, I'd say it's exciting. Except to the fact that those Bengals and Viking fans, you got to feel bad for them with the heartbreaking loss they have on a field goal made and a missed field goal. Coming up next, what's this to say about the NBA right now and what's happening with the MVP race and pretty much for the Knicks and Nets and that situation? We'll talk with Jarvis Warren here. You'll see a multimedia writer for the MPBA. Pretty much talk about his transition into that and also what he's been doing throughout the year. This is 1240 at WGBB in Long Island.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB. Be sure and visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Hey, fantasy sports fans. DraftPot has an exclusive offer for Sports Talk 1240 listeners. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. That's right. Sign up today at DraftPot.com with the promo code SportsTalk1240, and DraftPot will match 100% of your first deposit. What are you waiting for? Do it now.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Whether you're a couple enjoying a romantic meal for two, a family wanting to dine in a relaxed and friendly setting, or a larger party wanting to celebrate a special occasion, Miller Place Pastoria always combines a warm welcome with the finest contemporary Italian cuisine and wines, also serving up Long Island's favorite pizza. We're located right on Route 25A in Miller Place. Come visit us today and check us out online at mppastoria.com.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
Back here on Sports Talk 1240 AM WGBB in Long Island. Yeah, a lot of stuff to talk about the NBA. You know, first of all, I want to say something about NFL before we get into the NBA. Yes, wildcard weekend is officially over, and now you have the divisional round. Yeah, I want everybody to focus on one of these teams, and only focus on the person with the better execution on offense and defense, because that's what's going to determine who's going to be in the AFC and NFC championship, regardless of what they are in the Patriots or the Packers or the Cardinals or even Carolina. So we'll see what happens from there. Getting into the NBA, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening in the NBA right now. You got the Knicks, you got the Nets, you got, you know, the East and the West, and the different switches of power now in the East and the West. You know, you got the Warriors and Spurs still going hot, and Thunder going up there as well. I'm going to start with the Nets here before we get Jazz warring on. It's just been a very interesting day today. You know, I got a pretty much insane alert from Bleacher Report and also on ESPN saying about the Nets fire Lyle Hollins and pretty much reassign Billy King. And then I say to myself, why is that happening right now, though, when the team is already what it is? I mean, if anything, they should just play out their years, then reassign both of them, or even get fired both of them. But it's a very interesting call, because a few years ago, they made a trade, basically, to have Paul Pierce and KG come in here for pretty much a lot of round draft picks to the Celtics, pretty much helping out the Celtics now because they have a better future. But Celtics had to find another way to get a star, which they got to figure that out. But looking at this Nets team and the way they constructed it, it was doomed to fail, because Lyle Hollins and this roster, they didn't fit. They wanted to play a different set of style, and it didn't seem like he had the players to do that. I mean, when they had Darren Williams on, they didn't pretty much do anything. I mean, Darren Williams was a shell himself. Now it looks like he's pretty much good in Dallas. Maybe it was a coaching. Maybe it was just he wants to play the game. We'll see what happens from there. But then you look at Joe Johnson. I mean, look at that contract that he has. Somebody's going to have to either pick him up, because I know one thing. They're going to buy him out soon, and you want Joe Johnson to be on either on a contending team or even on a team where you say yourself, do they have a chance to go far with Joe Johnson, you know, leading the way, or pretty much being a secondary or third scorer? Then you look at Brook Lopez. He's a great, you know, center. I mean, I don't put him in the top five center in terms of scoring and rebounding, but, you know, he has limitations. People see him as pretty much a ball hogger when he sticks the ball. I mean, people see him when every time he tries to get his players involved, they don't know what they're doing, and then they somehow, you know, get a turnover, and then they score on the next basket. I mean, that's pretty much what Brook Lopez is. Then you had Jared Jack, who just got injured out of nowhere, and pretty much in that Celtics game, I mean, when I saw the injury, that was devastating to the team. But more importantly, that's devastating to the point guard position, because now you got Shane Larkin starting at point guard. I mean, do you really want Larkin to start at point guard for what he did with the Knicks and that disaster that they had? Larkin at point guard seems much turnover prone, and he's not really a guy where you can say yourself, in crunch time, do you trust him on making the right play? Because in that game, the Celtics almost won that game, but that was a long time ago as well. And then you have Taj, you know, Young, pretty much a surprise for the Nets, considering that he's averaging almost in double figures, and also how 8 to 10 rebounds. But, you know, that's a lot to discuss. Then you look at, you know, the bench. Is this bench really that good? I mean, have you seen the Nets and the way they score? You have Bryani coming off the bench, which was pretty much awful for against when he was on the Knicks. And then now he's just scoring, you know, pretty much whatever he wants. But the team is not really exactly gelled together. And now they have the assistant coach pretty much taking over the terms. But you look at that Nets team and you say to yourself, what are they going to be in the future? I mean, are they going to clean house? Are they going to let go of Joe Johnson, which they probably will, or probably trade him away? Are they going to see if Jared Jack's going to sign with them again, considering he got the ACL injury? Is Brook Lopez capable of being that player, and you say to yourself, oh, he's going to be the star, and he's going to take over the team and all that? But looking at that and also injury to the rookie, they have a long way to go because their schedule is not exactly going to be as good as it's going to be. I've seen so much of their games be like, you know, they look competitive. They look like they have a shot. Then they have games where they look like they don't belong in the same same court with most of these teams. Take a look at the Knicks in the first matchup. They got blown out in Madison Square Garden. I mean, which wasn't even a game until the fourth quarter. I mean, you look at that, and then, you know, you say yourself, I mean, even yesterday, they lost to the Pistons, 103-89. Pistons are a good team. And, you know, Brooklyn right now is 10-27. So that got to look easy for them. Tomorrow they got San Antonio at home. Do you see them pulling off victory against Greg Popovich and that team? I think San Antonio Spurs are going to probably even rest their stars just so they can beat them with their bench players and their role players. I mean, that's not a team you want to mess with. And there's one thing you got to understand about the Nets, too, is that this year doesn't get any easier. They got the Knicks on January 13th. I mean, you think the Nets are going to beat the Knicks? I'm not saying it's from a Knicks standpoint, but, you know, it's going to be a tough game. Then they pretty much face Portland. They're still a young team. They got the Hawks. That's not going to be an easy game either. You got the Raptors. First of all, the Raptors are actually playing really well right now. And you got DeMar DeRozan pretty much just taking over, and Kyle Lowry doing what he wants in the point guard position. So that's going to be tough, too. Then you got Cleveland. I mean, my goodness. Can this schedule get any tougher for the team? Utah. Oklahoma City. Look, these are home games right here. Miami. I mean, come on. And then you go on the road in Dallas and Texas in January. And then New Orleans. And then that's pretty much the month. And then 1st of February, you got the Pistons. So it's not going to be an easy schedule for the Nets. I could see them go either 3-7 or 4-6, but I don't see them go that far. And pretty much you got to understand that this Nets team is not exactly constructed to go anywhere this year. They're going for the future. How much cap space do they have for this team in the future? Are they going after Kevin Durant? And they go after DeRozan? They go after any of these free agents out there? But how you got to do that when you don't have the team capable of winning? And that's going to be the question right there. What is the owner going to do? Because he already made a mistake on doing the trade with Paul Pierce and Garnett. And at the time, I did not like that trade at all. Because there's some things about that trade that didn't make sense. You have two old veterans who are past their primes, probably being role players at that time. But Paul Pierce doing what he had to do more. Now he's in Clippers, and he's doing pretty much the same thing he did with the Nets. But it just felt like that team was a win-now team. But at the time, people say, well, you know, it's a good trade. Maybe they'll compete for the fourth seed, try to be against the Heat. But at the time, it was just pretty much a one-year experiment. I mean, did you really believe that team was going to stay for 2 or 3 years? It was going to be pretty much you want to win that year. But even with those pieces, it didn't fit. You had a rookie coach in Jason Kidd. He pretty much made that team relevant in January when they turned it around and become a fourth-seed team. Then you had Jason Kidd leave. You had Lionel Hollins. Paul Pierce got traded. Garnett was there for a while, but then he got traded to Minnesota. He signed with there now. Now they're all gone right now. There's a lot of questions you got to ask about that Nets team. But, you know, it is what it is. We'll see what happens. Maybe the Nets will turn around. Maybe they won't. But I'll tell you one thing. If the Brooklyn fans want to understand about this Nets team is that they cannot take over New York City if they're not winning games. And that's not going to be anytime soon unless they make a big splash in the market. Now look at the Knicks side. Knicks are having a lead right now over the Bucks. It's pretty much been an up-and-down team. They're like the Nets last year. Day and night. They have one streak where they win 4 games. They have one streak where they lose 4 games. And then they go back again, win 3, lose 3, win 2, lose 4, win 4, win, lose 2. That's pretty much what they've been. But these last couple of games against these 500 teams, starting out with the Hawks, they won against them. Then they won at them. Then they went to San Antonio. Almost won a game. Let me tell you something about that play with Carmelo Anthony at the end of that play. He made the right play. But to me, I think he had the drive right there good enough to either draw a foul or make a shot. Now, people are going to say he made the right play and he was open. But, I mean, he's paid to make the big shots. And I know Kyle Rowan was open. But now people are actually praising him, not making the right play. And it seemed like he didn't have to take that shot. So we'll see what happens. But as of right now, the Knicks have the lead against the Bucks. They pretty much, you know, they're going to be probably 19-20. And you look at this team and you say to yourself, how much better they can be? Are they going to make a trade in point guard? Well, I'll tell you one thing. Jose Calderon, look, like I keep saying before, he's a good, solid point guard when he shoots the ball and makes shots. But when he doesn't, he's useless on the court. He can't defend all these fast point guards which we have in the league. And you got to say yourself, can they keep this up, scoring pretty much outscoring other people when you got Jose Calderon at point guard? Aaron Afalo is a nice piece on the Knicks. I mean, you look at Aaron Afalo, and he gives you pretty much 15 to 20 points. I mean, that's something that people don't understand about Aaron Afalo. Like, look, there is times where it looks like he's ball hogging it and he's taking most of these shots over Porzingis, because Porzingis has some good nights as well. I mean, look at Porzingis' stats. You know, it's pretty much around 15 and 8, which is probably what I said through the earlier in the year, saying that he should average around that much, and that would be good for regular year campaign. But then you look at Aaron Afalo, look at Porzingis, look at Melo. That seems like a little small big three right there for them. Then you got Lopez. I mean, he is what he is. He's a defender. He's not really much a scorer, even though he's been scoring a lot of points now lately. But he can defend. You know, he could pass the ball a little bit, but he sticks the ball a little bit, and they need to know how to move the ball better. That's how they play at their best. Then you look at that bench. I mean, Langston Galloway, he pretty much disappeared, but he's bringing back up. Derek Williams, the same thing, up and down player. Kyle Quinn, up and down player. Most of these players on the bench are up and down. And then you say to yourself, is this team capable of being into the playoffs? Well, I'll tell you one thing. When the Knicks try to get into the playoffs, then we'll see, you know, how good this team is. But right now, they're competing for it. They're out of that, and they're not even close to sniffing the playoffs. But looking at that Knicks schedule, because they pretty much went through all the 500 teams that they had to go through, and you look at it, right now, the Knicks are leading only by 11, so with 4:53 to go. So that's going to be something that they can look for, because the fourth quarter, they got to close it out. But January 12th, they face the Celtics. That's not going to be an easy game. Celtics are right there and actually competing with them for, you know, the 7th for 8th seed. Then you have Brooklyn, of course. January 16, you got Memphis. That's not going to be an easy game on the road. You got 76ers. I mean, that's pretty much a win. If you can't win against 76ers, then you got problems with yourself. Then you got Utah. That's not going to be an easy win. They're a young team. You know, they may be competing for the 8th or 7th seed as of right now. So that's not going to be an easy game. You got the Clippers at home. Now, that's going to be an interesting game against Chris Paul, Paul Pierce, and DeAndre Jordan. Then you have Charlotte. They won there. You got OKC at home. It's not going to be easy with Durant. The Raptors, not going to be easy. You got the Phoenix Suns. That's not going to be easy either, even though they lost a lot of pieces. Then you got Golden State at the end of the month. I mean, that team's good. That's going to be a good game, but I don't know if they're going to win that game, but I think they can make a competitive against the Warriors. As long as you limit them from not shooting too many threes, and Jermon Green not going off against Porzingis, which is going to be a good matchup. And then, you know, February 2, you got Boston. So, looking at that Knicks schedule, you see that there's teams that are tough, and there's teams that they got to win, like the 76ers, like the Utah Jazz, like the Phoenix Suns. OKC's going to be tough. The Warriors are going to be tough. Memphis is going to be tough. The Nets, they should win. The Celtics, they should try to win that game. There's games where they win, and they could be over 500 at the end of this month before even the All-Star break approaches. So, you know, these teams itself, they have a chance to either make something happen or fall close, you know, where they were last year and just drifted apart. But it looks like this is a different Knicks team with a different mindset. And, you know, I say this as a Knicks fan that I've seen this happen before. Just do it one game at a time. You know, this it's not going to be that type of situation where you're going to have a pressure situation where you got to win 5 and now it looks like, oh, they're a playoff team. Then they lose 2. Oh, you know, they're not a playoff team. They stink again. I mean, that's what the average fan will say, you know, to this Knicks team. But I'll tell you one thing. They're a grit team. They compete. They know what they're doing on the court. And pretty much Derek Fisher is going a little bit out of the triangle offense. Now you see him more doing pick and roll. And that's something that he didn't accustomed to do before. He used to be just doing triangle. And I feel like he's doing it with the strength of the team. And I'm telling you one thing. When you have a player like Grant coming off the bench, who I didn't mention before, but pick and roll situations, you know, that's pretty much what he's best at. And I know he can learn the triangle and all that, but, you know, this type of team isn't equipped for the triangle just like they don't have the players to execute for the triangle. And that's why they've been playing better than before. Now, hopefully the Knicks can understand that they got to have to play a different style of basketball, triangle, mixing up with other stuff. But, you know, that's going to be a question that's going to be answered, hopefully. Then you got pretty much the NBA overall, the East side. Pretty much a power of, you know, turnovers, if you think about it, because last year you had the West being more competitive and the East being, you know, not too competitive. Now this year it's almost like a power switch. They switch powers now. Now you got the East being more competitive and the West being pretty much weaker. And the Knicks right now, now they're competing for that spot. But I look at the East, I look at the Cavaliers. They're still number one seed. They're healthy right now. Irving's there right now. They're playing at the right, you know, time now that January is pretty much the dog, you know, year, months of the year, because most of these teams just slack off. But the Cavs are still there. The Bulls are still there. The Heat are still there, even though they're an older team. Then you got pretty much the Hawks, the Raptors. You got the Celtics competing. You got the Magic competing. All these teams are competing in the East. And I look at this East, and you say to yourself, is there any team in the East capable of possibly being the Cavaliers? I could say there are two teams that could probably be the Cavaliers. The Chicago Bulls and the Miami Heat. Those two teams have probably the best chance of being there, because there are three reasons why. Dwayne Wade, Jimmy Butler, Derrick Rose. Now, I mentioned two players on one team and one player on the other team, but Dwayne Wade has history against LeBron where he plays pretty much at his best. I think healthy, he's probably, you know, averaging more points than LeBron in a one-on-one matchup. And, you know, you got Chris Bosh, you got Hassan Whiteside, you got Dragic. These players, they all mesh together. They pretty much have a good defensive team that could probably hold down Cleveland. Now the match is going to be Irving and Dragic. Can Dragic try to slow down Irving? Can Dragic score as many points? You know, that's going to be the key right there. And then you have Jimmy Butler and Derrick Rose. Are they going to mesh together? Because you got Gasol. You got the pieces in Chicago. You got a more offensive team than you have ever before. And yet the Bulls are pretty much have become outscoring teams more than playing defense. And it looks like the defense is just slightly a little bit lower than it was before. But if Jimmy Butler can play where he is and Derrick Rose can play where he is, then you see this team probably heading to the right direction. But, you know, that's how the Bulls are every year. Every year it's the same thing with Chicago Bulls. Oh, they're the team to be in the East. Oh, they're the number one seed. They could beat Cleveland, and they could beat LeBron. But the many times they face LeBron, it's always end in five games or sweep. And it's almost like how many pieces they get the Bulls, they somehow cannot beat LeBron. I mean, LeBron pretty much had no love. He had a banged-up Irving, and yet they beat the Bulls. I mean, how is that something that you could say to all these analysis saying, oh, Chicago can do this? But until that happens, I could see Miami Heat going on. And we have now our guest here. We have, oh yeah, Ungwa. Oh, we got Ungwa here, who's supposed to be on the show today, but you know, something happened, but it's okay. Ungwa, how are you doing today?
I need a new car. I'll tell you what, if someone wants to call into 631-888,
yeah,
whatever the rest of the number is, I'd be glad to take donations. No, but on all serious note, weather sucks sometimes, so I'm glad at the very least I could be here for the last couple minutes. What a weekend it's been.
Yeah, NFL, you know, talk about NBA here, about the Nets and a little bit of the Knicks. But tell me about your NFL wildcard weekend before we get into the NBA a little bit. What do you think of this weekend?
Disappointment. I mean, the only good game ended up being a 10-9 score. The Chiefs smacked the Texans. Cincinnati really embarrassed themselves. I'm not calling that a close game because Cincinnati still should have won that game.
Yeah, that was
bad. You know, Washington's gravy train ran out. You know, it kind of went the way we expected it to go, you know, all things considered.
And you got Seattle winning it. I mean, which teams are more dangerous, like the wild card team? Because, you know, we did a poll. I did a poll on Twitter, and 36% say the Chiefs are more dangerous, and the second is Seattle. Which team do you think is more dangerous?
I think Seattle's way more dangerous. They have way more dynamic weapons offensively than Kansas City does. And the one thing that I think people fail to note about the sixth seed in the NFC, they're still the reigning NFC champs.
Yeah.
So when we're talking about you know, your typical sixth seed of a team. This isn't one that's just sort of happy to be there. This is a team that still expects to be in the Super Bowl out of California this year. So even with the injuries, even with the, quote, turmoil that they've had in and out of that locker room, I would be way more scared of Seattle than any other team. Fortunately for me, I like Cam Newton enough to beat the Seahawks just one more time this year.
Yeah, hopefully that happens in the playoffs, and we'll see us from there. Now, looking at the divisional round, which four teams you got advancing to the championship?
Whew. I mean, that this is where the games are actually going to be good next week, and I actually can't wait for that because there aren't really any surprises with these matchups. And even better, you know, most of them are regular season matchups. So as far as next weekend goes, I'm going with my head over my heart. The Pats are going to edge out the Chiefs at Gillette.
Yeah.
I think the Packers are going to shock the Cards because without Tyrann Mathieu, the Cardinals just aren't the same. I still have Panthers over Seahawks. Bank of America Stadium is going to be loud as anything. And then Broncos versus Steelers, this all over again.
That's going to be interesting.
I'm going to take the Steelers.
That's going to be interesting. And you see those matchups going to championship round. Anything could happen between these four teams. Now, looking into the NBA, because we only got a little bit of time here, what do you think of the Nets situation? Because I felt like it was just too early for that happening, and maybe it should just happen before.
I think the fact that they went into the season with Lionel Hollins, I'm very glad that they were able to, you know, salvage last season. But with that being said, I think the timing was right. I really do. You already know that the rest of this season is a wash. They don't have a first-round pick, and their roster, at best, is miserable.
Yeah.
Miserable. You're at a point where you might as well go for it. Like, it's crazy to me. So, where I'm concerned, the Nets needed to make a move anyway because they've stagnated. Ever since they tried to re-sign the old Boston Big Three, they've stagnated ever since.
But that's just a bad trade in particular. When they did that trade, I didn't think it was going to last. And you know, they want to make a splash, but I didn't think it was good enough to do that.
Oh, my goodness.
Then, now, on the Knicks side, they won today. What is this team right now? Are they competing? They're competing for a playoff spot, but have they finally turned around and say they can win against these teams now?
I think it's early. I think it's very early. But I like the Knicks' chances. I had my, quote, bold prediction at the beginning of the year that the Knicks are going to go over 500 and make the playoffs, and I think they're well on their way. What's going to help them out immensely is the fact that Porzingis is a much more viable offensive option than I think any of us saw him being to start the year. And secondly, he works very well with Robin Lopez because usually – when you talk about two big men that really sort of play different roles, you got to kind of figure out how you're going to use them and how they can adequately be used. Because Porzingis is such a great interior defensive presence, but can also go out a little bit, that leaves Lopez free to sort of play free safety around the basket, whether he's got to box out, whether he's got to be the last man standing, and it frees up the Knicks defenders to actually do their job. Aaron Aflalo has been a great addition on that end, been one of the better two-way guards this part of the decade. What hurts them, they need a point guard, as bad as anything. I give Calderon credit because he's held it down for them to this point, but they need a point guard.
Yeah, they really need a point guard.
Point blank, period. No matter how you get them, by hook or by crook, if you get a point guard, you might be able to make some noise in April and May.
Yeah. So now, you know, NBA overall, because we've got a little bit of time here. I look at this MVP award tracker. I'm going to give you pretty much five of them, but give me a guess. Who are the five MVP candidates right now?
I'm going to blow this in many ways, but let's give it a go. I'm going to go with Draymond Green, LeBron James,
Yeah.
Stephen Curry.
Ooh, LeBron. Well, keep going, actually.
Okay, so I said Draymond Green.
Yeah.
Stephen Curry.
Yeah.
LeBron James.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Dwayne Wade.
Not even close.
I know. I told you.
One more.
Russell Westbrook.
You got Westbrook, Green, Curry. The last two is Durant and Leonard.
Go figure.
And Blake Griffin's actually up there, but he hasn't been playing. Chris Paul is still up there. Jimmy Butler is number 10. Kyle Lowry, number 9. Chris Paul, number 8. 7, Blake Griffin. 6, LeBron. You know, Leonard, I said. Durant, Green, Westbrook, and then Curry. The fact that Green is number 3, I mean, the way he was playing right now, he's pretty much playing as the best power forward right now in the game, but he's number 3. That's crazy.
And I think what makes Draymond Green such an enigma is the fact that usually when you talk about great power forwards, you're talking about guys that stand between 6'9 and 6'11, like in the Kevin Garnett sort of fold.
Yeah.
But why Draymond Green is just so effective is his versatility. Yeah, he's not the biggest dude on the floor, but he can still fill all of those roles. He can rebound. He can pass. He can even shoot a little bit. And without him, Golden State's not nearly the same team. I remember around this time last year, people said, wow, Draymond Green's really stepped up. But we didn't know if he was worth, you know, max player money.
I think
he is. I really do. And you don't need – what people misunderstand about being a franchise player is that you don't need to be the principal scorer to fill that role. In Draymond Green, you have a phenomenal defender – and a man you can trust with the ball in your hands. And actually, one of the more efficient players in the NBA, he averages only about one dribble per touch, which means he knows what he's doing with the ball before it goes anywhere. I know people like to get caught up in the crossovers and all that other sort of stuff. What makes a basketball player so dangerous is his ability to move the ball. It ain't always got to be a shot. The pass before the pass is something that Draymond Green does very well, too.
Yeah.
So he's a franchise player.
Well,
I love it.
Well, we got pretty much 30 seconds here, but I want to thank you for being on the show and talking about your opinion on the NBA and the NFL. We'll be in contact, of course.
You already know, and I will be back in studio next time. Yep. I promise.
All right. Yeah, and we got Unquo here. I want to thank Thomas Emmer for being on the show as well. And also thank Twitter out there for voting on the questions of Chiefs being 36% of the hottest team being most dangerous. I want to thank Twitter out there and those Chief fans and Seattle. I want to thank Brian. He's always doing a good job here on the board. And I want to thank all of you for listening on 1240 and Sports Talk 1240 in Long Island. Tune in next week on January 24th. We'll probably be doing a show with Unqua pretty soon. Thank you for all listening. Have a good night.
The views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.